That's like a soccer mom.
Are we rolling?
Yeah.
Sure.
We've been rolling the whole time.
We've been rolling.
Fantastic that you guys got me to do that.
It's like a soccer.
I'm like, I didn't hear action.
It's like a soccer mom Sunday. It's kind
of. All right. Fantastic.
Right into it.
Hey, Anthony, where'd you get this podcasting stuff from?
It fell off the back of a truck.
I guess we might as well make an introduction here.
Yeah, because we can cut it back.
Welcome to another episode of Breaking Bread. I'm Sal Valentinetti, joined as always by Anthony Sciarrata. Greg Heinrich is behind the camera, chiming in from time to time.
How you doing?
And today we have a very special guest. I've been friends with this guy now for, we're going on 5 years,
yeah,
6 years almost.
We're gonna get it
right. Yeah, I've had the honor of watching his career just completely soar and take off. He's one of the funniest people, if not the funniest guy that I know. And he's just a great guy overall. One of the most, in my opinion, one of the most creative comedic minds of our generation. It's Anthony Rodia.
Wow, you said generation.
Generation. Wow. You are
creative is a nice way to put psych.
Because you span, you know, you kind of bridge the gap between our parents' generation,
yeah,
and the next generation coming up, because you are so your comedy, your stand up is so forward, and yet All of the ideals and all of the situations in your stand up, besides the stuff that goes on with your family, with your wife and your kids, is what we went through with our parents. No matter whether they were off the boat or not, and no matter whether they were Italian or not.
Yeah, I mean, I started with the Italian generation, the Italian culture,
because that's your experience.
Exactly. But then, as I started touring, I realized they're not just Italians coming to my shows. You got Italians, Portuguese, Argentinian, Polish, German, white, black. I mean, you have all different types. And so now what I kind of mention all the time is that we're like different teams, but our parents use the same exact playbook.
Exactly.
And it's scary, man, how many people different. I had an Asian dude come up to me my last show, and he runs up to me, he goes, I didn't think I was going to rock your show. It's very good. You show, it's funny. I said, thank you. He goes, I was raised the same way, you. My father fucked me up. All right, well, I mean, my whole generation or my childhood wasn't just my father. No, my father beat me. All right, you look like you need to speak to somebody. I'm like, you look like you're calling out for help. But it's nice to see that it wasn't just us, and it wasn't just Italians, and it wasn't just our family. It's so relatable all across the board.
Culture, man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Culture.
I mean, and listen, you have, my parents are immigrants. They came here from Italy. My mom came here a little younger than my dad. She doesn't really have an accent unless she gets mad. My father's accent got worse because he just spoke to everybody else that spoke like him.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see the immigrant side, but, you know, me doing the skits online, that keeps that kind of, you know, culture alive. And then what I do on stage, I used to do a lot more of my dad, but I've kind of branched out now where, you know, I talk about everyday life. I talk about kids. I talk about marriage, because I don't want just an Italian audience. You know, it's nice, but then you end up bottlenecking yourself. And then
right. People
that aren't Italian might not come to your shows because they're getting that, you know, that type of, or whatever, you know, oh, well, he only does Italian.
No, your set hits everybody.
Yeah,
I want to, you know, relate to everybody, and it's been happening. Yeah, you want to open up whatever you want to call it. You want to open up your audience to everybody, you know. And now, you know, I mean, you and I have met when I first started. Now you see a difference where my age demographic was different. It was like 50 and up when I started. You know, I'd have 80-year-olds in the crowd, and you know, my wife's like, I got nothing to worry about. I'm like, you know, I'm an 80-year-old groupie. And she used to come to my shows, and I'd have like 5 80-year-olds taking pictures.
Gladys.
She's like, your fans are adorable. Now she came to a show, and now I have 20-year-olds to 80-year-olds, where it's predominantly 25 to 45. That's
yeah.
my large group. And now they're taking pictures of me. And she's like, who are those 6 putanas that would pitch? I said, I thought my fans were cute. I said, I don't, what, my fans are only cute if they're AARP members? I said, those are my fans.
Life.
So it's nice to see it branch out in different ages now and different kind of demographics.
Because you're not just connecting the audience member with the experience they had with their parents. You're connecting them with the experience that they're having right now, that they're having with their kids.
Yeah.
Or that even the younger generation, the Gen Z that you're getting at your crowd now, has experience with their parents.
Yeah, I have the kids experiencing with the grandparents or their parents. Then I have people that are married that experience it, people that are getting married, people that are too young to get married. You know, so it's nice how it kind of brings everybody together. I mean, think about a comedy show that's making a 20-year-old laugh, a 45-year-old laugh, and a 75-year-old laugh.
Yeah.
I mean, to kind of construct that comedy to appeal to three different generations, it definitely takes some thought. But, I mean, it instills faith in society that not everyone.
It's a killer combination. Your show, your stand-up.
I love that. I didn't do it on purpose.
Listen.
You know, but it kind of gives me a little more faith in society that, you know, hey, people still have a sense of humor and they can laugh.
I don't know if there's anybody out there left who hasn't seen Anthony Rodia live
because
he's been selling out.
No, there's a ton. Dude, I appreciate that. But there's millions of people out there that need to know who I am.
Right. Yeah, it really, you get a fantastic sense of who you are when you watch your stand-up.
Yeah, and it's different than my online stuff.
It's so different. It's completely different.
Well, the first 2 years, I was competing with my own characters. People were coming to my show expecting me to come out in an outfit, in a house dress, or expecting me to act out two characters. And the reason why I didn't do that, and to each its own, I mean, there are people that do the same thing online that they do on stage, but they do it live.
Right, it exists.
I didn't want to give them the same experience that they get for free, and now they have to pay. You know, so I wanted to kind of do something different. And, you know, and listen, there are people that do the same thing where they do differently online than they do on stage.
Yeah.
And there's people that do the same thing, but you see it live. And I wanted to give them all different aspects. Like, it's almost like, I always bring up Seth MacFarlane from Family Guy.
Yes.
You know, you watch Family Guy and then it's him doing the voices in the cartoons. But then you watch him live on stage and you're like, oh, this is the mind behind the madness.
Different,
you know,
different ball game.
And I get away with a little bit more on stage because we're in a, you know, it's not being spread out to everybody and you can't record.
In other words, you have there's a certain threshold of people that can comment on your stuff on social media that are not going to stand up and start commenting on your live show at your show.
Right.
You can kind of go a little farther and push the boundary and push the envelope. Not only is that what's so great about your live show, your physicality is tremendous.
I
until I saw your stand up, I didn't know you to be a physical comic. Right. And then more, as I watch over the years, more and more and more, it becomes a part of your stand-up, and it makes for such a spectacle of a live show. You don't have to do the characters.
It's a comfort. I mean, you know, I'll come back home from, you know, a weekend of shows, and I'll sit in my basement on a Monday night, and I'll watch my stand-up. And I'm like, oh, shit, I could have moved a little bit differently there, or I could have acted that out, or I could have said this, and the punchline would have been so much, you know, better. And I just keep working, man. But it's a comfort level. You start getting it's like you in singing. You know, you start owning the stage, and then something comes over you after a couple years of doing it, and you're like, oh, this is what I'm made to do. Why am I so uptight doing it? And then you become a little looser. Like now I'm starting to kind of speak to the crowd a little bit. I don't really like doing crowd work because I have so much material to get to. But I watch myself every week and I try to change something. You've been to so many of my shows where I don't think you've heard the same show twice, you know? And it's you hear some punchlines, the same punchline.
CB.
But yeah, it's changed and it's kind of reconstructed to kind of get more left.
I can maybe pick out a couple of things that I've heard from show to show.
So I've tried to take out the classics. I've gotten yelled at. People are like, yo, I came specifically to hear that bit.
What are the classics?
You got my father. His batteries are dead in his remote, so he can't pronounce AAA. You've got... And that I'm putting on a t-shirt now because it's gotten so popular. I gave him an edible. Yes. Came a 30-milligram edible that I thought was going to help him sleep and wake up with his joints feeling better.
Is that based on truth?
100%. It was a... He says it was a 12-hour ordeal. And he still now... Every time I'll give him like a gummy vitamin... He goes, I don't trust that shit. Last time you give me something gummy, I was talking to my chickens outside, and I understand everything that they would say. I'm gonna take an. I'm like, Dad, it's a vitamin C gummy. You're right. And he's like, I don't trust it. The last time my brain was all loop, and I was talking to chickens. And I'm like, all right, don't take the damn vitamin.
Did he like it? Did he like the high?
No. He was sitting Indian. So he lives upstate. He's got about 6 acres of land, and he's got like 40 chickens. And he was sitting Indian style in the chicken coop. It's got a huge chicken coop. The chicken coop's huge. It's a big chicken coop. But he was sitting Indian style.
It's the sound of music.
On like a cement bucket, right? On top of the bucket. I'm like, Indian style on a bucket? Anthony, I feel like I was afloat. And I was just talking to my chicken. And I'm like, really?
Sure, you're going to give him mushrooms?
I was like, dude, I gave you an edible. Like, I've taken chocolate mushrooms where me and three of my boys were back to back on a dock fishing. And I was like, dude, is the dock extending? And then he was like, I don't know, but I feel a mist coming off the ocean. And I'm like, I don't, we were bugging out. Dude, so you've met Marco.
Yes.
So my cousin Marco, he's my road manager now. He's on the road with me all the time. We took chocolate mushrooms in Florida, and we went to go play Topgolf after. But we wanted to get there before it hit. I took 3 squares. It literally says on the back of the box, 1 to 3, release, you know, your mind. 5 to 7, intense relaxation. Anything over 7, the walls will melt. Literally says on the box.
I don't like that. I like what it says, like 0.2 or 0.25 or whatever.
I think 2 or 3 squares. Marco takes 8 because he's like, well, I'm big, so I'm doing the calculations, body mass to pee. I go, that's not how it works, dude.
No.
So he takes 8. We're driving to Topgolf at like 8 o'clock at night. And he goes, bro, I don't want to mess up any plans, but can you just pull into there for 2 seconds? Let me just take a couple pictures. I go, pull in where? Right there, dude. We're at a red light, and he's looking over to the right. He goes, bro, that's why I love Florida. It's Wednesday night, 8 o'clock, and there's a full-fledged car show going on. New York never has anything like that. Pull in. I go, number one, that is a Honda dealership. Number two, they are closed. You need to go home. He goes, no, I'm going to Topgolf. He ended up swinging once, almost fell off the net, and then we just found him, like, in the corner in a fetal position.
Oh, no.
The whole time, yeah. So I thought that's what I gave my dad, because my dad was talking to chickens. I've never spoken to chickens.
I think I want to do shrooms with Marco.
You do anything
like
with
fun.
Marco. That do anything
like a
with Marco.
Great time.
Go out to eat with Marco. Do chocolate mushrooms with Marco.
Go to a
Cadillac
dealership.
Have you guys ever had the weed potato chips?
Wow. No.
So, weed like, once by accident, chips. I went to California with... Mo and he
went to California by accident.
No. We were just there. But
I thought we were going to Rochester. Yeah. I go, damn, this flight is long.
No, but I totally know what you're talking about because I had these potato chips. I didn't know they were weed.
Right.
They didn't taste like weed. So I finished the whole bag, and Mo's like, "Are you kidding me? You just ate a whole bag of weed potato chips." I was on the plane like this.
You did it on the plane?
Yeah.
Oh, I made that mistake once.
That's bad.
Bro, Mo gave me mints. He's like, yo, you want a couple mints? They were fucking edible mints. I took like.
So there's a restaurant. I forgot where. There's a couple of restaurants that you go there and all their food is infused with CBD.
Where is this place?
Yeah, somewhere. Yeah, it's. I don't. I've. Somebody
there's the,
mentioned.
There's that. The Lowell Cafe Field in trip. California.
We should go there by accident.
Go there by accident.
You guys hungry?
Let me call my wife. Jay, I don't know what happened. I was heading home, and I don't know what happened. We're in Vegas.
Oh, I'm not even allowed to go there anymore.
Yeah.
My wife said to me, she goes, if when you're performing in Vegas, you're allowed to fly in the day of and fly out the day after. Because, I mean, I've been to Vegas when I was single, I don't know, 9 times, and every time has been worse than the last. So
really?
She's like, yeah.
All those stereotypes are true because I've never
100,
been.
I don't know what it is. When you go to Vegas.
It's like Disney for adults.
It's so much worse because if something gets into your mind, you're like, oh, I can just do whatever I want. No one's going to find out. No, you have camera phones. You have people that you're with. I woke up butt naked in a tub of ice with one sock on.
Wow.
On my left foot.
You've been to a lot of really interesting places now. Mm-hmm. Like places, what's the most unexpected city that you performed in where you were like, I'm not expecting you, your agent calls you, you're going here, this is on your tour, and you don't think anything of it, and you get there and you're like totally either blown away in a good way or a bad way.
So I really didn't do a lot of traveling before this. You know, I've been to Florida and a couple of vacations here and there, you know, but Rhode Island and Boston,
I didn't realize how strong the Italian generation is there. Boston, and people in New York will kill me for this, but I mean, get out to Boston. Boston mm-hmm. has the nicest little Italy.
The best in the country.
Completely.
Yeah.
You're not wrong about
well,
that.
Well, Boston has the nicest little Italy, and I think Chicago, Taylor Street has the nicest Italian feast. Yeah. But those places are obviously well known for their Italian culture. The place that surprised me the most, obviously I went to California.
San Diego?
San Diego loved my humor. Irvine loved my humor. Sacramento, San Francisco, Austin, Texas. The biggest surprise was Greensboro, North Carolina.
Really?
Dude, you want to talk about hickey? I mean, I had a guy come up to me at the airport, and he taps me on the shoulder, and I'm like, what's up? He's like, I know exactly who you is. I said, thank you. You're a fan? A fan. Me and my wife coming to see you Saturday night. You were fucking hilarious.
Wow.
I'm like, I appreciate that. I said, but you get my humor? He goes, get your humor. I watch your videos, man. I feel like I'm watching myself. Me and you the same. I go, I don't think you're watching the right guy. And he goes, man, aren't you Italian? Your parents are from Italy. I said, from where? He goes, from Italy. I said, yes, my parents are from Italy. Mine too. I said, you're first generation? What do you sound like that for? And he goes, I know what you're thinking. He goes, I'm a little country, so I ain't Italian. I bet you I'm more Italian than you. I said, not a shot in hell. He goes, I make my own sauce. I said, I appreciate you called it sauce, but that doesn't mean you're more Italian. He goes, I make my own wine. I said, I make my own wine as well. He goes, I married my first cousin. I go, you win.
Wow.
I go, I cannot get any more authentically Italian than
right,
that.
And it has nothing
you
to do with
kept
North Carolina.
That shit in the family.
You're from the South.
Yeah.
No, that has nothing to do with the South.
That's not true. That's
there are a lot of cousins that have married. Like I have two cousins in Italy that they were like third cousins, and you know, he was like, "It's not bad." No, it's bad. It's bad. It's not bad. Yeah, when your kids are born, you're peaking going, got all the toes, your thing. What are you scared for if it's not bad?
I think my great grandparents or great great grandparents were cousins or something like that. Yeah, that happened all the time
happens,
over there.
Man.
I like your approach to replying to negative comments on your social media.
I love it, dude.
Yeah.
So I recently
I love it.
I recently adopted it. Like, you know.
How good does it feel?
It feels
to just let someone have it.
Amazing.
Yeah. Some lady just said to me today, so I had a bit that I put on, and it was about me getting sexually harassed by a 7-year-old woman in Florida, right? Mm-hmm. She literally looked me in the eyes. And I threw a couple of jabs at the older fan base, but you gotta let, we're all gonna end up like that. I said the lady had fake boobs, no wrinkles, and turkey neck, right? So everybody knows what turkey neck is. It's like when it gets really wrinkly and hangs, and like you'll get that sound if the wind hits it, right? Or if they shake their head really quick. So I said that, and then I said I knew she was 70 when she grabbed my ass because I felt her hand shaking when she was on my ass. Right? Everybody's gonna shake. So
that's amazing.
Then she going back and forth, she ended up looking me in the face, and you've hung out with me enough to know you can't rattle me. This woman caught me off guard. She goes, let me just tell you one thing, hotshot. These teeth come out. You don't know what I would do to you. So most of the people laughed. They found the humor in it. This lady, I just argued with her 2 seconds before I got here.
I think it was something else, Ann.
Huh?
I think she wanted something else from you.
Possibly. But she goes, this isn't funny, hotshot. And when people say that, that has to be the most fucking annoying thing I've ever. This isn't funny.
Who died and made you the jester?
The laughter commissioner?
Right.
So I said to her, no, this is funny. That's why you hear laughter from the crowd. That's why you see the comments being written that people find it funny. It's not funny to you, but that doesn't mean it's not funny. It just means that you're watching comedy with your feelings. Not so hot shot turkey neck. And I can't wait to see what she responded to. So what I do is I go back and forth like 1,000 times with them. I get them at their peak of madness, and then I block them.
That's one thing that I honestly really like about you, Ant, is that from watching your content for like a long time, you don't give a shit.
No, I don't.
Like, you know what I mean? Especially going to your shows, like, you know, you say things and you don't give a fuck what people think.
You can't.
Outstanding.
But that's original comedy. Comedy isn't like that for like a lot of people anymore.
And my parents always said, listen, you're never going to make everyone happy in life. But if you concentrate on the people or you dictate how you act based on the people that don't like you, you're never going to act yourself.
Yeah.
So why? I don't believe in not paying attention to the negativity. Pay attention. You need haters. You don't have haters, you're not big enough. But Don't act a certain way to appease the small percentage of people that don't like you. Concentrate on the ones that do. I probably have an 85-15 split. 85% of my fans like what I do. They understand comedy. 15% are just annoyed at everything in life. If I dictated how I act based on that 15%, I'd be ruining the experience for 85%.
You know,
like I'm telling you right now, if there's one kid and it's like a love-hate relationship, if there's one person that I would love to hit with my truck, are we rolling?
Yeah.
Are we going to play it? I'm sorry. I'll say it. No, I'm going to say it.
We can cut it out.
If there's one person that I would... No, you could play it because he knows I love-hate him. If there's one person that I think I ever see crossing the street and I'm driving my truck, I'm running over, it's Mario Bosco. Mario, I love you, but you also know I love and hate you. Mario is like a fucking pet mosquito.
He is.
It's like, you know, you don't want to kill it because it's your pet, but it's like... Mario pops out. Anyway, I went to go take a shit one night, and he came out of my toilet. He was like, can I open for you? I'm like, dude, what are you doing? That's my toilet.
I got 10 minutes.
Come on, Mingy, Anthony, Mingy. He called. So I get a phone call from a owner of a comedy club, and this guy's he's going to end up in my garage next week. Watch. He's going, a fucking knife. Elf on the shelf with a steak knife. So
with a knife with a pillow and a blanket.
I live here now.
Why'd you tell everybody I live in a sock drawer? So
can you call me an Uber?
I ended up picking up my phone, and the owner of a comedy club down south calls, and he goes, hey, what's up, man? It's so-and-so. And I was like, what's up? He goes, hey. He goes, just to run it by you, I want so I could set up the marquee and everything, you have Mario opening for you, right? I said, I told Guma Johnny, what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, but Mario said that you told him you can open for him, so he's flying down next week. I go, I'm going to choke the shit out of this guy. So I call him up. He goes, you told me at Governor's I can open for you. I said, open the door for me. I said, no, I didn't say fly down to North Carolina and open for me. I was making a joke. He goes, fuck you, Evan. I got it right here.
He was hoping that you never got that phone call.
Correct.
Because if he showed up, that's what he does. He shows up.
But I love Mario.
I love Mario, too. I can't say no to him.
No, you can't.
I can't say no to Mario.
You can't. That's the problem. He knows that.
Yeah,
well, no, I don't think he books flights. I think he just hides in people's carry-on.
Yeah, he stows away.
The ongoing
he is,
show.
He is the carry-on.
I was on tour one Christmas season. I was going from Rochester to Buffalo to Cleveland to Detroit and then home, and I was driving because I was big then.
Right.
And
I was big then.
Yeah. And Mario just shows up in Buffalo with a little hat and his gloves and everything.
Can I open for you in Cleveland?
And I'm like, I guess. I never seen it, like, other than Governors, I've never seen him do stand, like, open for somebody. And I said, all right, how long are you doing? He goes, just 10 minutes.
It's a long 10.
It's a long 10.
Small world.
Mario's got a great 10 minutes. Mario's got a great 10 minutes. The trouble is he goes on for 12.
Yeah.
So he comes at me to Cleveland.
The extra two ruins the 10.
It ruins it.
And just for everybody out there, this is called ball breaking.
Yeah,
this
we love Mario. Bullying.
Because people are like, correct, why are you bullying?
Hey, I say this to Mario. Whatever I say right now, 100%. I have. It's not anything I haven't said to Mario's 100%. Face.
So I actually talk better behind his back.
He loves.
This
what,
is
right.
an improvement. Right. I talk better behind his back than I do to his face.
we do Cleveland with him, and I'm like, how are you getting home? He goes, well, you're doing a show in Detroit, right? And I'm like, yeah. He goes, can I come open for you in Detroit? I said, sure, but where are you going to stay? So he goes to talk to the promoter. The promoter gets him a room.
He gets yeses.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. I'm not.
That's what I'm talking about. I love how you say it how it is.
Oh, dude, you got to call out stupidity. People think calling out stupidity is bullying. There's a thin line between bullying and breaking balls, but calling out stupidity is calling out stupidity. You don't call out someone stupid. Back in the day, you did something stupid. You had a relative or a friend go, don't do that, dude. That's fucking
right.
stupid. 100%. And then you stop doing it, or you got punched in the chest for doing something
right.
stupid.
Nobody checks each other.
No. And if you don't check someone that's doing something stupid, they're going to think what they're doing is not stupid. Then they're going to reproduce, teach their kids the same shit. And that's why you have an entire country now of dumbass people, because everyone's afraid to tell someone you're not supposed to do that.
You're just correcting behavior.
Dude, I went to the liquor store with my wife the other day. We got three bottles of wine. I put them on the counter. 22-year-old kid behind the counter. You could just look at somebody now and know they're dumb. Their mouth is open all the time. They don't know how to breathe through their nose. Just like. So he goes, can I see some ID? Yeah, no problem. I looked at my wife. I go, it must be my haircut. Yeah. So I gave my ID. I said, you all right? He goes, yeah, it's my first week on the job. I just want to be sure you're old enough to drink. I said, okay. So he looks at my ID and he goes,
ah.
I said, are we doing meth? So my wife goes, leave him alone. I said, leave me alone. I said, are we doing meth right now? So he goes, sir, I'm trying to make sure you're old enough to drink. Give me a minute. Oh, and now I'm getting an attitude. I said, well, let me streamline this whole thing for you so people think you're really smart. You don't have to take that much time doing meth. How old are you? He goes, 22. Are you old enough to drink? I am. When were you born? He goes, 2001. So isn't it safe to say that if you look at an ID and it starts with a 19, that we are good to go, my friend? He goes, give me a minute. I go, oh, dude, you're going to be working here for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You're going to be working here for the rest of your life. And that's what we're dealing. Dude, I go away all the time. I see different areas. Dude, we went to the beach in Florida. There was a dude with his wife in the water with masks on. Like, and then they probably go home and go, oh, my God, why do we have such a fucking stupid, ridiculous tan line? Like, you're wearing a mask. It's 85 degrees out. I mean, you're going to get a tan line. You look like an idiot. But it's scary out there,
man. You had mentioned it, and then I saw it everywhere. Was it people in their car by themselves?
By themselves with a mask on. And you know what? I posted that, and here's something worse than dumb people. The people that stick up for the dumb people, the people that have reasons to back up their, oh, how do you know they're not immune deficient and they're looking out? How do you know they are? Why can't they just be stupid?
Such
you know?
Nice
well, how do you know they're not an Uber driver? Because they didn't have Uber stickers on the windshield. I said, but even if they are Uber driver, they're by themselves. The problem is you scare people enough.
Mm-hmm.
Fear overpowers common sense.
Right.
Common sense goes out the window. You live your life in fear, and then you decide to do stupid shit because you're afraid. It's like at the end of the day, live your life. Even during the pandemic, I always told people, do what's best for you and your family. Don't do what's best. Don't fall for that shit. Protect thy neighbor. Because your neighbor doesn't give a shit about you, chances are. However, if I'm wearing a mask or not wearing a mask, but you have yours on, and the mask works, how come you're so worried about what the fuck I'm doing? If that mask works, then you're protected. You know, but everyone argued. The country got divided, which was the worst thing.
Yeah.
Because you had people that couldn't understand or deal with the fact that other people had different, you know, views and opinions. But now look where we're at. The CDC just came out 3 weeks ago, I think, and they said if you have COVID, no longer are you advised to isolate for 5 days. Just treat it like the flu, which is what most of us were saying from the get-go and getting yelled at. Now, I say shit like this, and people automatically assume, well, you probably didn't lose a loved one. No, I lost a very close cousin of mine. Now, there's question about his health and so forth. My friend's father passed away. He was a large man. He had breathing issues before COVID. So who's to say COVID actually is the thing that killed him? However, don't assume that people haven't suffered from what you're right. going through. Just
some people might understand it even yeah. more than
I you. Tend to just live my life. When it's my time to go, it's my time to go. And I'm not going to live my life in fear until that time. I'm going to live my life today as if tomorrow I'm not going to be here. You know, my wife and I are very different in that sense. She worries more about tomorrow. I live for today. And not necessarily I don't worry about tomorrow, but I'm not going to have tomorrow scare me and have me stop living today.
Right.
So, you know, but at the end of the day, dude, your time stamp is already, I believe, is already done.
Yeah.
Agreed. Your book already has an ending.
When
nobody
when
knows,
I'm ready
nobody
to
knows
go, I'm ready to go.
100%. Everyone's book, everyone's life has an ending. That's you don't know when it is.
That's what I tell my wife every time I road rage.
Yeah. Yeah.
She goes, one of these days you're going to get shot. And I said, well, you know.
That's already probably been determined.
Yeah.
You know, so why not live today for today? Stop worrying about everyone else. Live for you, your family, and the people that love you. And the ones that are yelling at you for living, why are you fucking worried about them anyway?
Yeah, I love
you. You know?
That's what people don't get about you, man, is that you'd be like that about anything. They're
anything.
So hepped up on COVID
right.
that they're making it about COVID.
Correct.
Clearly,
that's you in
what
general.
You just said, that's just you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and it's not, and you know, and then people, oh, you don't care about other people's lives. I'm very compassionate. I have a huge heart. I take care of my entire family. I look out for everyone before I look out for myself. It just means that I want to live my life.
You do plenty of charity work.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, dude. I'm a firm believer that I was not born with a silver spoon in my mouth. My parents were hardworking people. I always had a mentality, though, that I was destined for more in life, and I was the one that my family needs to lean on. I don't know why I had the mentality, but as soon as I started doing well in this business, first thing I did was buy my parents a brand new car. because they never bought a brand new car for themselves. They always made sure we had it and they had, you know, pre-owned or used or whatever, which is nothing wrong with it, but they never enjoyed themselves or splurged.
They put you guys first.
Yeah.
Because that's what parents do.
My mom, I take care of as many things as I can. And she's like, oh, I'm good. I have investment properties and this. And I go, who cares? You always did for us. So when people, like, they talk out of line where they don't know, oh, you're an insensitive piece of shit, you're not compassionate. Why? Because I choose to live my life and not strap 6 masks on my face and walk around in fear. You know, just because that's how I live doesn't mean that, you know, everything about me is negative. Yeah. It's just you and I disagree. But I also say, if you want to wear 2 masks, wear them. And I tell people at my shows, if you're in this audience right now of 1,000 people and you have a mask on because you're afraid of getting sick, but you still wanted to come out and enjoy yourself, don't let any of the other 999 people tell you you're wrong for wearing a mask. But if you leave this place and you get in your car and you drive home and that mask is still on, I'm going to call you a fucking idiot. Because there's no one in your car. So it's like, I don't tell people how to live, but I will call you out if you're doing something stupid. And at the end of the day, I tell people, who the fuck am I? Just a person with an opinion. So if I'm calling you out for being stupid or for doing something that I think is stupid, that's my opinion. Right. You don't have to die by the sword. You don't have to die by my words.
Right.
Give it back to me.
Tell me to go fuck myself.
Tell me I got thick eyebrows. I look like Bert and Ernie. I've heard it. Tell me I probably haven't been on a fucking roller coaster without being on my tippy toes first. I've heard it. Fucking break my balls. At the end of the day, I tell everybody, you will live a better life and you will be less offended by everything if you learn to fucking laugh at yourself.
Right.
COVID was very serious, man.
We're back to the back. Sorry.
They wouldn't sell me the mask because I thought I was a minor.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. At the end of the day, man, people suck.
Speaking of, like, you know, taking chances and you know, making your own way in your own path in life, you've really made your own way in this business. Like, you've really doubled down on yourself. You make a lot of bets on yourself. You make you have the wine. You have from what I've heard and from what I see, you're still developing some sort of show for your characters.
Yeah.
I think that's still in the future.
With me, it's just timing.
Right.
I've never chased a dollar. I think when you chase the dollar or the quick buck, you tend to make irrational decisions based on now versus long term.
100%.
So, I mean, but I've always bet on myself, man. My family, my friends, they all call me an idiot for wanting to leave my job that I made really good money. I was able to support my family to follow a dream. And I'm like, well, I've always been a firm believer that if you're able to do something you love in life, you can never consider yourself a working man because you're never I don't think I'm working ever. Because this is what I love to do. This is what I would do if I wasn't doing this. I'd still be making people laugh when I wasn't at work. So I think the worst thing in life is to never take a chance and always wonder what could have happened rather than take the chance, fail, and at least you know. So I bet on myself with that. I didn't want to wait around for a Netflix or an Amazon for my special. So September 30th, we filmed it. I went all out, balls to the wall. I had, you know, a 5-camera crew inside the Paramount. I did it at a sold-out Paramount show of 1,100 people versus a small theater. I mean, small comedy club.
Several sold-out Paramount shows.
Yeah, we did, last year alone, I had 7 sold-out shows at the Paramount.
Several.
Yeah. You know, my Long Island crowd is insane. But I filmed it myself. We just got it picked up. I could finally announce it next week. But it's going on a large streaming platform. I bet on myself. You have to bet on yourself.
Schmetschmix?
No, it's not Netflix.
Shmrine.
But I'll stop there. Because obviously you guys are going to go, Blamazon Prime. so it you have...
Blue?
Fruit Loops?
Not saying it! I made a promise and a pinky swear, even though it's like right here trying to get out. But
do it.
Not doing it.
Do it.
No, not doing it. No peer pressure.
It
won't go in.
What you just said was one of the most important reasons of why... Or one of the most important themes of our podcast is you're a self-made guy. You followed your dream. You know, you quit your job. People thought that you were like an idiot. We all kind of have a similar story in that kind of regard.
Right.
So well, it's the worst thing especially
100%. Yeah,
and especially in an
100%.
Like,
I didn't leave the pizzeria until Heidi Klum was a sure thing.
No, dude. Regret's a bad thing, man. I tell people so many times that, you know, I feel like if you make mistakes in life and those mistakes lead to lessons learned, then you can't really regret the mistake you made. However, if you don't take a chance in life and pursue something that's burning inside you to pursue, that's a regret I don't want to live with.
The best
you
thing
know?
To do is make a mistake.
100%, man. You make a mistake, you learn from it, then it's a well-made mistake. You know what I mean? Everybody makes mistakes. I mean, I love the saying, you know, a winner is just somebody that fucking lost and tried one more time. You know, it's true. I didn't just come out and I started headlining sold out shows. I rented out theaters myself with my own money. I was doing small shows. I crawled before I walked. I walked before I ran. You know, I went through the steps. Now, that doesn't take away from the respect that I have for guys like Sebastian and Bill Burr and Dave Chappelle and Martin, Kevin Hart, who didn't have social media as a platform. You know, guys like us have it easier because you make one viral video, a million people know who you are. These guys had to grind out every night, five shows a night, going to the Cellar and going here.
That's what happened with Bill Burr. He bombed in Philly.
Yeah.
That's what kind of like shot him up.
Oh, yeah, no, that bomb in Philly definitely got him, you know, more known. But those guys had to grind it out. I don't know if I would have had the time to grind it out like that because I did have a family already. I was married with a child when I started this. So I use social media. But a lot of these guys look down on guys like me because they take it as, oh, I took a cheat code to success. No, I still grinded it. During the pandemic, I made fucking videos every night at 7 o'clock for 96 nights straight.
Yeah.
New dialogue, new scenarios, new video, new topics.
I remember this.
People were tuning in like a TV show, 3-minute videos.
Comes up with an idea on the toilet at 8 o'clock in the morning.
100%.
And then and then gets online and says, I'm going to be doing a video about this at 7 o'clock tonight.
Yeah.
Doesn't have the video, just kind of has the
idea. Dude, I can't believe you remember that. Yeah. So I would wake up with an idea.
Thea
Lucia tries to kill Uncle Vinny.
I've told you this before, and I mean it. I'm such a fan. I really am.
Well, when you sing, I get moist. I'm being dead serious, dude.
That's why we're in Florida.
Dude, let me tell you
together.
Something. You know how many times I've watched your audition on America's Got Talent?
Thank you.
Dude, so it's like mutual
You're the
fan
guy.
Base. No, but it's a mutual fan base
so
and a mutual respect.
I am such a fan of you because you are so determined in everything that you do. It's not just those videos.
It's a calculated risk.
What was it? Westchester County Center? What was your first show?
The White Plains Performing Arts
Center. The White Plains Performing Arts Center.
Wow. I rented it out myself.
Anthony basically went to a theater at a mall in Westchester, rented it out, and sold it out.
I was selling tickets for $20 a pop to everybody.
Sold it completely out.
Wow. Yeah, like 445 people.
His first show.
Yeah.
That's outstanding.
Started as a headliner. I never really opened. I opened for one person years ago, and it was Capone.
Yeah, wow.
Old school comic. Yeah, Capone was awesome. But I opened for him at an event. But, dude, I mean, I can't believe you remember that. But, during the pandemic, I said to myself, this is when people need to laugh the most. Right now, what we're going through, laughter trumps all. Laughter puts you in a good mood. So every morning I'd wake up with an idea. I would post something at 12 o'clock. Zia Lucia kills Uncle Vinny or attempted murder, blah, blah, blah. And then from 12 o'clock to 7, I had to script it, film it, edit it, and post it. So I put myself up against the wall for three months straight until Michelle said to me, you got to take a break. Your head's going to pop off. But, you know, the followers came with that. I mean, I went up. I think I had combined 230,000 followers, and we went over 1 million before the pandemic was over.
Yeah.
And those people started coming to shows. And at my shows, they still say, thank you for what you did for me during the pandemic. You gave me a laugh every night at 7 o'clock when I needed it the most.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what I mean by you're one of the most creative minds in comedy because you're just constantly coming up with something else and something new.
Yeah.
You're constantly innovating.
You have to.
Constantly at it.
We had people come to my show this past weekend in Jersey. They're a cruise ship club. They go on cruise ships together. There's maybe 30 of them. The lady has been to 39 of our shows, 39 shows, and she says every time I come, I hear about 20 minutes of new material.
Yeah.
You know, to bring people to your show is easy. To bring them back 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times within a 4-year span, you have to keep keeping it fresh. You come up, if you do an hour stand-up and you're coming up with 20, 30 minutes every 3-4 months, that is a new show to somebody in the audience. They're not going to remember everything like you do because it's your show. But you have to keep reinventing yourself. You can't get stale. because then your fan base gets stale.
So pandemic happens a year after you left your job.
Yeah, so I left my job March 18, 2019. I was with Roger Paul. That was before I was with CAA. And, I mean, I left. Like I said, it was a calculated risk. I left, but I had 6 months of shows booked, and then we just kept booking. So I worked through that. Holy, I think I did 190 shows my first full year of doing it full time. And my wife's on pins and needles. Because then she finds out that she's pregnant with my son, my second child. That pushed me even harder. And then I was rolling, man. I mean, we were doing bigger shows. The audiences were getting bigger. The money was getting bigger. I mean, I was making, you know, in a week what I was making in a month. It was crazy. And I was bugging out. I was like, there's no way this got to where, you know, I didn't expect it to get to. Pandemic hits. I get a phone call from my agent. He says your calendar is wiped clean. 166 shows canceled. I was booked all the way until June. Everything canceled. And I'm sitting in my basement and I'm watching the news and they're showing the death clock of every time somebody dies, they roll the death clock. And my wife is bugging out. She's like, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to make people laugh. I said, if anything, and doing it full time, doing this as a job now, I have more of an appreciation for laughter because you talk to your fans. People that are terminally ill, people that lost a loved one, people that actually need laughter.
Right.
I'm like, country needs laughter, man. These people need to laugh. They need something to get them off, you know, what's going on. And that's what I always tell people. Comedy should be an escape from reality. That's what you should use comedy for. You know, where you don't have to be going through something serious, but it just makes you forget all the bullshit. And I said, I'm going to make them laugh. And I started doing video after video after video. 1 week became 4 weeks. 4 weeks became 8 weeks. And I just kept doing it 3 months in a row. And my growth started growing so quick. Like I said, we were getting 70,000 new fans a week on Facebook.
That's insane.
70,000 on Facebook, 10,000 on Instagram. And it was just, I was like, holy shit, man. But I still wanted to get out there and perform. So I ended up putting my head together with Mike Martocci and Goomba Johnny, who I tour with, and I said, well, we can't perform anywhere, but can we perform outside? And he's like, what do you mean? I said, let's do a drive-in comedy show. And I started renting out parking lots. I did it at Rockwell's. I did it at Red's in Jersey, where we'd rent out a parking lot. People would tune into their car and hear me in their car, and then I'd be on a flatbed performing outside. I mean, we did outdoor shows, and we did that enough to where it carried me through the pandemic financially. And then once the pandemic kind of died down a little bit, my shows blew up because people were coming out to kind of, you know, saying, hey, you did this for me during the pandemic.
Right.
Here's my support for you.
They couldn't wait to go see you.
Yeah. Yeah. They had like hey, I can't wait to shake this guy's hand and thank him for, and they still thank me for what I've did to them during the pandemic. So, you know, that's another reason why I snap at people that, you know, they might not have a sense of humor, understand what comedy is. They're like so negative. They're like, oh, you know, this isn't funny. I'm like, dude, you don't know how many people that need this laugh are using it as a laugh.
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up, dude. Stop being so negative.
Yeah.
Right.
You don't laugh from it, scroll on, man.
See, like, that drives me crazy because you're not supposed to like everything.
You're not.
Does. You wouldn't be a human being then.
Correct.
That's not real life. It's
if you
not
hang
reality.
Out with me all day and you don't find one thing about me that fucking annoys you, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, that's not reality.
There's shit about me that annoys me. Right. Well, you can't.
See, that's what's cool about him, because you actually don't care.
No, I not care, I don't care. If I care more that you're bothered by something I say.
Yes, yes.
Why are you caring so much about what I say?
Well, Anthony,
I'm a
Anthony,
comedian.
Anthony,
I'm not a nutritionist.
Anthony feels, it's more important to get what he feels out, because he's a comedian.
Correct.
His whole stand-up show is his perspective on things.
You want to go watch a woke comedy show where the person's afraid of offending people?
Hell no. I want to know. I'm here to see this guy because I want to hear his perspective on the mundane, everyday things that
My father told me when I was a little kid, if you got something to say, get it out, because if you keep it in, you're going to get odder than shit your pants. I don't want to shit my pants.
That's right.
That's it.
Anthony Rodia doesn't want to shit his pants. And if you want to watch him keep from shitting his pants, you go to RodiaComedy.com.
Yes.
Anthony, thank you so much for coming.
Awesome.
Thank you for hanging
out. I'm living with my in-laws for 11 months because we're renovating my house. So anytime you guys want me back, like tomorrow.
I want to talk to the chicks.
Tonight.
I want your dad had.
Yeah, listen, next time I come on, I'll bring my pops, man. I can't promise you won't get canceled.
You can come watch me paint for the next 4 weeks.
Are you renovating too?
Oh, I mean renovating. That's a heavy term.
Well, you mean like painting a house or like
an easel?
Yeah,
painting a house.
Oh, I didn't know. Like, I go to his house, he's butt naked with a canvas. I'm like, this is not what I thought you meant.
No. You're going to be butt naked. Anthony, can you put this apple in your mouth and cough?
Why am I coughing to be painted? That's my question.
You should have to do it over and over again.
Put
so
this
I get
red
the visual.
Ball in your mouth and just lay there, please.
Rodea Comedy on all social media platforms.
Yeah.
Anthony, is there anything other than the streaming platform that your upcoming special is going to be on that you want to tell our audience?
Yeah,
by the way, we will because this will be since we'll know what streaming. So it's going to be on here.
Yes,
it's going to be on here. You could check out Anthony's special here.
Yeah,
and anything else?
I had fucking fun breaking bread, and I'm amazed that that's actually not a real storefront that we're in a set. I'm bugging out.
Shout out to Anthony for putting this incredible set together.
I mean, I'm waiting for that window to open up and somebody reach out with an Italian ice. But no, I had a blast with you guys, man. Have me on anytime.
Thank you.
The best, Anthony.
So
thank you.
Thank you. I'm really excited about this podcast.
Thank you, man.
Thanks. Good. From Sal, Anthony, and Greg, this has been Breaking Bread. Take it easy, everybody.